Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 604, Micro Rec Actions, recorded live on November 14th, 2017. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
I am your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we are back with a little bit more semblance of news this week from the Halo Universe, but we still have a little bit of downtime, it seems, just from what we've seen out of Halo Waypoint and around the community. But we have a little bit to discuss, and there's some drama within the gaming communities, not necessarily the Halo community, but it does kind of pose some implications that we'll get into a little bit on the show. Maybe not too much, because it's a conversation that is a lot of, there's a lot of opinions around it, and there's a lot of, I can't think of the other word, not hate, but disdain, I guess would be the next closest word I can think of. But we'll get to that in a little bit. First things first, though, GT was planning to have another recording session of Achieving Halo this weekend. So did that happen? And if it did, how'd it go?
It did go, and good. It went terrible.
Uh-oh.
We get all the way to the end of the level, and just as we kill the boss, the game crashes.
Oh, jeez. Oh, no.
That, and I was having a devil of a time remembering where the last piece of intel was.
Oh, that's all right. Did you get a chance to do it again and record everything, or do you still have to go back and record it again?
Well, what I did is I went through and played it again by myself and just recorded the last little bit. So it'll be kind of a piece together one. But it does bring up an interesting little thing. I want to know, from the people that show up on Fraggin' Friday, if they would like to film an episode of Achieving Halo.
Ah, that's not a bad idea. Are you thinking this Friday or one of the subsequent Fridays coming up?
Well, it kind of all depends on who I hear from. You know, granted, it take about an hour of the game night. And, you know, if you guys are up for doing that, I'd definitely be down for doing a recording. Unfortunately, presents some logistical hassles, but I can overcome them.
All right.
For those of you that tune in, you can actually watch a recording of Achieving Halo during Fraggin' Fridays. So let me know what you think. You can hit me up on Twitter at Godzilla Todd, or hit me up on Xbox Live at Godzilla space T. Don't spell space, just put a space.
Godzilla T, space is appropriately placed.
Yes. But let me know what you think.
All right. We might put up a Twitter poll, too, and see what people think about doing that as well. So, what about some Halo news? Should we get into that?
Sure.
All right. So, the latest update called Raising Expectations, with expectations dropping the E because of Xbox One X and all that fun stuff, is the latest community update, and we have a couple of things changing pretty quickly with regards to matchmaking and some other community related stuff to talk about. Nothing too big as far as any big announcements or anything. A lot of focus on the community with this week, so we'll just kind of go ahead and jump into it. The Oddball playlist is going to be moving out pretty soon, if it hasn't been already by the time that this podcast gets released, and will be replaced with the Anniversary Throwback playlist. Oddball came in during the Overtime update last week, and is going to be moving out pretty quickly, which kind of sucks to see that it's moving out so quickly, because I actually got to play a little bit of Oddball this weekend, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I haven't been brave enough to go in there yet. Too many tryhards.
It's actually not that bad right now. There was one game, though, where I took a clip of this on my Xbox, and I think I have automatic uploads turned off, so I don't know if people have seen it in the feed. Our team won it at the very last second. I smash someone in the face with the oddball.
Nice.
It was kind of fun. I need to pull that down and post it in the right places. But looks like Oddball is going to be moving over to the HCS playlist, and they're going to be using that as a test ground to see if Oddball is a good addition to the HCS game modes for the upcoming winter 2018, which will lead into the Halo World Championship for next year. They're going to be initially testing Oddball on Plaza, Eden, Overgrowth, Empire, Rig, Truth, and Mercy. They're coming up with a set of settings for the Oddball game mode for HCS, so all the Oddball fun is going to be moving over into the HCS playlist, and then Anniversary Throwback, which is a good playlist, will be taking back over the spot in Oddball. It would be nice if they added Oddball into that throwback playlist.
It would be nice. Don't get me wrong. I like that they had it on a on its own dedicated playlist for the introduction of it. But I think it will do better if it's in a rotational mix.
Yeah, throw it into the team objective and also throw it into anniversary throwback. I think it would be a good mix in with those game modes already. But it's only been out there for a week. And to see them change it out this quickly, it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of bothersome. You know, they have been keeping them out for at least a couple weeks. And to have them, you know, do that and, you know, pop it out, then all of a sudden it's gone again.
Yeah, I'm not too thrilled about it, but, well, I'll say this.
What are you going to do?
That, and if they can put it into some of the other playlists as at least options for being pulled up in matchmaking, then I'll be happy. I just don't want to see Oddball just make a quick entrance and then say, okay, no, we're not doing it anymore. Just HCS. And it's like, no, not just HCS. We need a little bit of fun on our own without having to play the pros or the tryhards. And yeah.
Yeah, I would like to be able to play it without having to play everything. Play Oddball without having to play, you know, all the tryhards, all the pro players, you know, things like that.
We'll see. I think it makes sense to incorporate that stuff in eventually. So hopefully we'll just see it sooner rather than later if they haven't done so already. Regarding Oddball for HCS, Grim did do a Q&A interview in the update with Josh Minkey, who's the lead engagement designer for 343, and they talk a little bit about why they're putting the playlist out there, how they're going to be pulling feedback, what settings are they going to use, and the other considerations they have going into Halo Worlds for 2018. A lot of the stuff you can probably pull from previous HCS test playlists that they've done. It's the same kind of collection of feedback through the forums. And they're going to be evaluating the settings, making tweaks, and seeing how the new weapon changes will balance out weapon placements or other things that they need to change on maps, that kind of stuff. Pretty standard run-of-the-mill Q&A, but if you're interested to see what they're doing for Halo Worlds with regards to Oddball, then I definitely recommend you go check it out. Next thing on the update is actually something pretty cool, and it's something kind of new. In the Microsoft Give campaign, this is an annual campaign that I think, based on the little bit that's in the update, is a charity campaign where people donate money to support charities. And this year, they actually set up an Xbox gaming tournament, which was open to basically Microsoft employees. Which is kind of nice because a lot of Microsoft employees don't get to compete in any kind of events because they work for Microsoft and they can't participate. So it was kind of a fun way for Microsoft employees to just have fun, get to interact with other departments within Microsoft and have a good time. They had Halo 5 free-for-all, Forza Motorsport 7, and Age of Empires DE up for tournaments during this Give campaign. And none other than our beloved Bravo won the FFA tournament.
Nice.
So way to go, Bravo. You do us proud.
I guess he still has something.
He does. He certainly does. All those years of Halo paid off.
Imagine that.
He faced off against DudeMan27, who was, I think, an MLG player back in the day, in the final round of the FFA, and he won the match 10-4.
Wow. That's saying something.
But hey, he's got it.
Yeah.
And actually, reading the brief synopsis, he was actually down 2-0 at the start, and then he came back and won 10-4.
I think he was just being nice.
Very well could have been, but knowing some of the other people that work at Microsoft and some pretty talented Halo players, they probably put a good run for his money.
17-4. Yeah, I think he was messing with him.
It was 10-4, not 17-4.
Oh, all right. 10-4. Still.
Who knows? It would actually be pretty cool to see the game clip of this. I doubt they have it, but if they somehow recorded it, it would be interesting to see the VOD of the match. So 3-for-3, if you're listening and you have it, that'd be cool to see.
Definitely would be cool to see.
Grim interviewed Jin Panettone from the Xbox team, who coordinated the Xbox gaming tournament, and went through a little bit of how they got it set up, what it was like to host the event and bring this as part of the Give campaign for Microsoft. And Grim kind of pulls through some of the experience that they have with HCS and setting up those tournaments and a lot of the logistics going into that. So there's a whole Q&A interview about the setup and some of the difficulties and challenges that they had to bring the gaming tournament to life and the other tournaments that happened. So I definitely recommend that you guys check it out. Strongside and Unicheck actually provided some commentary during the Halo FFA tournament piece. And I bet that would have been a lot of fun to watch.
Uh-huh.
I don't think Uni has casted any of the HCS events that I can think of.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you because I haven't watched that much of any of them.
Not a knock against Uni, but he's not timid, but a very just like chill attitude. He doesn't raise his voice that often and get like super excited with his voice as much as some of the other casters do. So from a casting perspective, you like casters that bring a lot of,
well, excitement and entertainment to the broadcast.
Right, and energy. And
I'm not saying that Uni's not entertaining. It's just,
because he's very entertaining.
He doesn't get excited like a lot of the other casters do. I mean, I know he's excited about being there, but he doesn't telegraph that to the audience. The funny thing is, I used to work with a guy. It didn't matter if he was just absolutely pissed off or just won the lottery. You'd never be able to tell. I am not joking. And Uni kind of strikes me as this kind of guy. Don't get me wrong. Uni actually shows more emotion than this guy does. I mean, you know, talk about deadpan. It just, oh.
Yeah, that's a good term for it.
You know, I watch some of Uni's live streams while I can. And yeah, don't get me wrong. He's entertaining. I just don't think casting is a good fit for him.
He definitely has the smarts to be able to provide that education level of being able to describe what's going on, but as far as building that energy and that emphasis and hyping up the crowd and the viewers, not particularly his strong suit.
No, not really.
Next things on the update are a few little radar blips, so I don't think we covered this last week. If we did, I apologize. Halo 4's 5th birthday was on November 6th last week. And then Halo 2's 13th birthday was on November 9th. So happy birthday to those two games.
Most definitely.
Halo 2, the podcast that helped start Podtacular.
Yay, Halo 4 is no longer a toddler.
Yeah.
It's wearing big boy pants now.
Yay, 13. Forest still got a long ways to go.
No, that's what I was talking about. Halo 4.
Oh, it's gotcha.
Wearing big boy pants now.
Yes. And Halo 5 is a wee 2 years old.
Oh, the terrible twos. You know, there are points in my life I'm glad I don't have any kids. Don't take that the wrong way. I love kids, especially when they're somebody else's. Oh.
Well, we're bound to have kids at some point. At least that's kind of the direction we're looking at.
Oh, that's great. Don't get me wrong. If it were possible for us, we'd probably have a few ourselves.
I've heard they're pride and joys, but at the same time, they are a lot of work, but very rewarding. So we have those two birthdays, so happy birthdays to those Halos. Forge Hub turned 10 on the 11th of November, so happy 10-year anniversary to Forge Hub, one of the main forging communities of the overall Halo community. They have plenty of Forge tutorial videos for Halo 5, and they've had map contests in the past, one of which even had a $1,000 prize pool. So they regularly do Forge competitions and some with monetary prizes to go with it. They did a charity stream, which I didn't have a chance to tune into, but they were raising money for Extra Life since that was this month as well. So happy anniversary, Forge Hub, 10 years. A nice, good number. That's pretty much it. We talked about the rec pack skins for some of the new competitive packs. Luminosity is out there, and the next two are going to be coming down the pipeline soon, but you can get the Luminosity Gaming Pack for $10, and that directly supports the Luminosity team or organization. So that one's available. The next two are coming down the pipeline soon. Community Spotlight this week is filled with a lot of good stuff. It's probably about half of the post. The first thing up from the community is a couple of screenshots or renders, I guess to be more appropriate, by some people over from the Halo subreddit and someone that actually did some stuff in Valve Source Filmmaker and After Effects. Some really cool Reach stuff. The one screenshot that I have up there is just one of, I think, 6 or 7 that this artist made. So if you have a chance to go check out the community update, I highly recommend you do. There are some almost direct recreations from some of the scenes in Reach, and then there's some artistic takes on other pieces and other facets of the Reach storyline. So definitely check that out. Next up is a video that was done by the Templin Institute, and it's almost like a UNSC recruiting video. And they had this kind of bumper in the front, and then they took a whole bunch of different clips from the games, whether they be cutscenes or gameplay and that kind of stuff, and they cut it into almost like a montage recruiting video sorts of things. And it's really, really well done. This got released a while ago, but they just posted it on the update today. So it's a really well done video, really well put together, and it makes for a pretty cool video that you can almost see like taking place within the Halo universe as far as a promotional video or a recruiting video.
Lord Hood wants you. Oh.
Yeah, exactly. There's another Halo 5 montage video that they posted. The montages seem to be coming back in full force for Halo 5 at least, so it's good to see that we're getting some really cool montages out of Halo 5. Next thing, Sticker Boy, for those who know him on Twitter, posted a Halo IRL moment of the back of a fire truck that reads 343 still riding. Pretty funny to see Halo stuff in real life. It's fun when it happens. There's a couple of artist drawings and paintings that have been highlighted as well. One of Master Chief with the railgun on what I'm guessing is Saint Helios, judging by the...
Judging from the aesthetic, yes.
Yes. And it is really well done. It's... There's some talented people out there. He says painting. I'm not sure if that's... I can't tell, I guess, paintings. Maybe kind of looks like it has a potential to be an oil painting. Or maybe pastels.
It could be.
Either way, it's really, really great.
Yes.
There's another one of Master Chief and the Arbiter pulling from the Halo 5 design of their armors and weapons of choice. And then there is one more that looks like a pencil drawing done by a person by Guyver89. Last few things at the bottom of the update are some screenshots. Lots of different themes here. Lots of cool things from Halo 5, and looks like a few crossovers from just inspiration from some other screenshots in the past. Definitely check those out. That's it for the update. We're going to go ahead and do our giveaway, kind of approaching in here in the middle of the show. With the release of Legacy of Onyx out today, we are going to be we're going to be giving away both a copy of Ghosts of Onyx and Legacy of Onyx. Legacy of Onyx actually picks up pretty close after the events of Ghosts of Onyx, so we thought it would make sense to go ahead and give away both of those on our show tonight. For those that are listening via download, we are doing a giveaway on our live shows for every show leading up through the end of the year. And all you have to do is come to our live show on Mixer, be there when we do the giveaway, and you'll have a chance to win whatever we're giving away. The last few times we have given away a full set of Halo icons. We gave away the first series of the Halo Heroes set. We gave away a Grunt and Plasma Grenade plushie last week, and we've given away a Mega Block set. So we're kind of going around the board as far as different kinds of Halo gear and Halo swag. Every week's a new week to win something different, so definitely come on over and check it out. We have four people in the chat, and I just did my random.org roll, and based on that, our winner is Bobby B444. You have won yourself a copy of Ghosts of Onyx and Legacy of Onyx.
I think Bobby already said he's got both of them.
If he has both of them and he's willing to give them up, I will re-roll. So Bobby, it is your chance. He says he doesn't have Legacy, and he is going to forgo it. So we are going to re-roll for another potential winner here. Let's see who we're going to get drawn up here. The result is, and this person might have it already too, Pins. Pins Halo.
Yep.
he said take it out. So, okay, so we're down to two people. You can tell how popular the live show is ever since we moved to Mixer. A lot of our audience hasn't moved over yet from Twitch, but oops. All right, so we have Erkibu and Destiny Halo are the only two left. This is literally a coin toss. Maybe I should flip a coin for this, because this is literally a coin toss. All right. I am going to say heads for Destiny Halo and tails for Erkibu. And we'll see. Oh, I have a Halo Challenge coin. I should be using that. Where did they put that? Ah, here we go. Halo 5 Challenge coin. Thanks to Laird for giving me this during PAX. We'll do, again, heads will be Destiny Halo and tails will be Erkibu. So here goes the flip. And it is heads. Destiny Halo. You have won yourself a copy of Ghosts of Onyx and Legacy of Onyx. And Erkibu just says he has the book too. So we pretty much had an instant winner with Destiny Halo. Well, we'll find something a little bit harder to give away that maybe not so many people have already. So yeah, Destiny Halo, just DM me on Twitter an address for me to send the books to, and we will get those ordered through Amazon and sit on over to you. If you want your own copy of Legacy of Onyx, then you can go over to podtaggler.com/onyx-legacy. That's Onyx, that is spelled onyx-legacy. And we have our that goes to our Amazon link, and you can purchase it through there. It takes you straight there and makes checkout pretty easy. You can get the Kindle version, which is currently $11.99, or the paperback version is $9.78. They didn't have the audiobook price up when I looked earlier.
The audio price book is... why is it not showing it? 19 something. Let me look again.
Okay.
I bought it and I don't remember the price of it. Isn't that nice?
That's funny.
Okay. It's free with an Audible trial. And yeah. After you get done with the Audible trial, you get to keep the book.
Nice.
If you want it for free and you don't have an Audible membership, sign up and get one for free.
It still doesn't tell you what the price is, does it? Well,
it did, but now that I've already bought it, it won't tell me what the price is.
Oh, here it is. I see it under one click. Buy. It's $19.84 for Audible.
It's regularly $22-something.
So, yeah, there you go. All right, moving on to a few other things to wrap up tonight, community-related. We have Halo Heroes Series 5 is now available. So the Halo Heroes are kind of the iconic figures that are given a little more fine-tuned print. And they have the little stands. I actually have one here that I can show the stream. This is Decimus that actually belongs to Confal. I just haven't sent it to him yet because I've been waiting to see what else he wins before sending this, but I'll probably send this soon since he hasn't run anything else lately. But these are what the Halo Heroes look like for those that are on the live stream. It's just the standard figure, and it has a little stand with it. Series 5 features a Halo 3-style Master Chief with the Mark 6 Mjolnir armor and the Halo 3 flamethrower, which is really cool. There's also the Arbiter, Sergeant Johnson, Cortana, Truth, and a Brute Bodyguard. So all those are available now, probably at your local Toys R Us or Target or some places like that. In addition to those figures, we also have a couple new sets that they have been pushing out as well. Primarily the UNSC CTF Arctic Warthog and the three new UNSC drop pods, which I actually found at my local Toys R Us this weekend, and I bought all three.
Nice.
Which is weird, because usually my Toys R Us is pretty behind on getting the new sets, and they're actually, this time, pretty on top of it. A lot of the new stuff was there. The Arctic Warthog was actually there. The drop pods were there. And a couple other of the new sets were there, too. So I was kind of surprised. You can check that out at Toys R Us, Target, Walmart probably has them, whatever other building set or toy store that you have around you that would sell them. So that's it from the Halo Waypoint side of things. A couple other community things. The latest Halo Loot Crate, the Legendary Crate, has a pretty nice new Mythic prize that was just tweeted out by Loot Gaming earlier this evening. And one lucky winner to receive the Halo Mythic Crate is going to be receiving a Xbox One X. It's a pretty big deal.
That is going to be one, well, hopefully one happy person.
They probably will be. You can head on over to podtaggler.com/lootcrate and sign up for the crate. The current theme is The Great Journey. It's based off of Halo 3. And it will be available until December 15th. So you have about another month to buy the crate to be eligible to win the mythic crate. And then on top of that, get the Halo crate that comes with this coming month. For those that weren't on our last show, they actually revealed the icon's figure, and it's kind of a throwback to the Halo 3 Starry Night scene where you see Master Chief with the bubble shield. Probably one of the cooler figures that I've seen so far out of the whole icon set. But you can make sure you check that out, podtacular.com/lootcrate. And you can use code podtacular at checkout for $3 off of your crate. Now on to the fun discussion of what has the gaming community all in a fuss today. So GT, you want to do the honors, or do you want me to kind of lay out the ground rules for this debate?
Considering I have not been paying attention to the latest drama, why don't you lay it out?
So there were a couple of announcements from EA regarding the latest Star Wars Battlefront, and it had a lot of people concerned about how they're treating microtransactions and a whole lot of other things when it comes to paying for additional content within video games. And we had our little Discord server, a little bit of a buzz regarding what could the gaming community overall, or how would it affect the gaming industry, based off of the feedback that we're seeing across social media and how EA has responded to some of the different feedback that the community has voiced. And overall, what does it mean for possibly Halo in the future? In Halo, we've seen a number of different purchasing schemes or mechanisms. The early days of Xbox gaming was you had your base game, and then you would pay for additional DLC. That's what we saw with Halo 2 and Halo 3. Halo 4 and Reach had the same thing. And then we got into the realm for Halo 5, where we started seeing microtransactions through rec packs. And there's a lot of other games that use microtransactions as well to help fund additional features while keeping some of the other core aspects of the game free to everyone else. So one of the things that really early on Halo justified the use of rec packs for was to make all the DLC for Halo 5 free. Regardless of whether you paid for the game and anything else that would be coming down the road, you could buy rec packs or you could not buy rec packs. They were planning on using some of the rec pack money to pay for the additional content that'd be coming to Halo 5. They were going to make everything Halo 5 after the launch free, which is an interesting way to do things. You do run the risk of, if people aren't on board with your paying scheme for the microtransactions, then you might not be able to get that money back, but you could reintroduce something like a season pass, like we saw for Halo Wars 2. So there's a whole bunch of different schemes and a whole different mix of things that could apply to different games, and some games microtransactions work better for, other games season pass seems to be the way to go. Or if we were look into some of the older models, a paid DLC would be another option that has been used before. I guess the big thing that's on everyone's mind is, what does the future of gaming look like with regards to microtransactions, and more specifically for us, how is this going to affect Halo in the long run? Leading up to the launch of Halo 5, rec packs were kind of a very touchy subject, and 343 did a lot of work to do, not necessarily damage control, but to clarify what rec packs did as far as affecting the game. Thankfully, it was only segmented to one part of the game where it really had an impact, which was Warzone. And then the other parts that you were buying were just aesthetic. So anything that was arena and your traditionally competitive parts of Halo, all the rec packs did for you was get boosts that helped you with your overall rank, not your skill rank, but your Spartan rank, like your career rank, just the how basically proving how long you've been playing. So the boost in that, and then the cosmetic pieces, your armor pieces and emblems, that kind of stuff. So Halo 5 was overall pretty well received. There was still a lot of reservations, and I had a lot of reservation. And I know if we go back to 2 years ago when we were talking about some of the rec pack stuff, there was a lot of concern and reservation behind the rec pack system, what it was doing, and what it can mean for potential Halo games down the road. I guess right now, for people that are in the chat and for Godzilla T and I, we're going to be kind of discussing what we think of where Halo should be going with microtransactions, or should we be looking for more for a DLC route. GT, what do you think about all this?
I have to admit, I really have enjoyed having the free DLC because it doesn't split up the player base. One of the problems with earlier Halo games, and one reason I still haven't completed some of the achievements in Halo Reach and Halo 4, is the fact that when those games were out, when they were the latest game, there was this division in the community. And it made it extremely hard, even though they had dedicated playlists to the DLC packaging, to get the maps that you needed to complete the achievements. Now, it's a simple fix. Don't tie achievements to maps. Okay, that problem's fixed. But the underlying real problem is still there. I paid for these maps. I want to play these maps. And I don't want to have to do it in custom games all the time. You know, I want to be able to go into matchmaking and play these maps and not get, you know, not just keep getting the same map over and over again because the rest of the people in the lobby don't have the maps I want to play. That's the downside to having paid DLC or a season pass. The potential upside to it is that you lose the pay-to-win argument. You know, that argument just disappears. But with Halo 5's rec system, now I'm not saying that if you buy a bunch of rec packs, you don't have an advantage.
Because you totally do. Or you're more likely to.
It's not like in some other games where you can buy a weapon and dominate the entire game. You still have to, yes, you have more selections of weapons to pick from when you reach that particular rec level in Warzone. And you have more of each weapons to use when you reach that rec level in Warzone. But you still have to reach that rec level. And chances are there is going to be somebody on the opposite team that is at the same rec level that has a weapon that will counter your weapon. So it's a crapshoot if it's an advantage or not. And that boils down to player skill. If you're good with the weapon, yeah, you can dominate with it. If you're not good with the weapon or you're mediocre with a weapon, you'll get a couple of kills and then you lose it. And that's the one thing I do like about the rec system in Halo 5. Yeah. Somebody pulls out a Prophet's Bane. That's fine. They had to work up the rec energy to pull that Prophet's Bane out. They're not pulling that Prophet's Bane out in the first 30 seconds of the game. Well, unless it's Warzone Turbo, but...
Yeah.
Throughout the last 2 years, I have never felt that I was at a disadvantage because I did not buy rec packs.
True.
Pretty much every single weapon that I got, I purchased with rec points. Now, don't get me wrong. I've bought some rec packs. You know, the special rec packs, you know, like the Reach pack, the Voices of War pack, the special individual packs. But, you know, that was for rec opening videos. So I could show people, if you decide to buy this, this is what you can expect. You know, you're going to get this, and then the rest of it's going to be random. You know, I have to say that I've never felt like I was at in a Warzone match that I was ever at a disadvantage because I didn't spend hundreds of dollars on rec packs.
For me, I think early on when a lot of people just didn't have many recs to begin with, it was kind of a bigger issue. But I think now with how long Halo's been out there, everyone has probably unlocked quite a bit of stuff already or have gotten the rec cards to spend. So there is a lot more of that balance there now. But I think the issue would have been more prevalent early on than it is after the longevity of the game.
Well, I mean, you know, it's no different than somebody, okay, you know, me, for instance, I have unlocked every permanent or every rec card there is as far as weapons, vehicles, armor I'm still working on, but a lot of that's you got to buy. So I probably will never unlock it. It's no different from me today and somebody starting brand new. Somebody just bought Halo 5. At that point, I'm the same as the guy that spent $4,000 on rec packs to that person. The one thing I would like to see, especially late in, you know, this late in Halo 5's development, is that at least for new players, all the base loadout weapons are unlocked. The base battle rifle, the base DMR, the, you know, you don't even have to unlock the other magnums because you already get the base magnum unlocked. But in each category, the base weapon is unlocked because that gives them a weapon that they can use at different ranges for different things.
True.
You know, just as a loadout weapon.
And with the updates to the recent weapon tuning, they make them a little bit more viable as well.
But yeah, the rec system, overall, I'm very happy with it. It's a way for 343 to bring in income so that they can invest in Halo 5. To tell you the truth, I would almost bet that we would not already have a 4K update for Halo 5. Granted, that affects a very small percentage of the population. And we probably wouldn't be getting the attention that we're getting on Master Chief Collection either.
Yeah, you're right.
Because all that stuff still has to be paid for. As much as they love Halo, it costs money.
They got to put a body to fix it or do whatever they're doing to it. So they got to pay them.
You know, if you're somebody that wants to spend the money on rec packs, go ahead. It's your money. Do what you want with it. You will have a small advantage for a short period of time until the people that choose not to spend money on it catch up. So right now, I could pull out any weapon that anybody that's bought rec packs has actually bought rec packs can, with the exception of a Phaeton.
Still waiting on that one, huh?
No, I've got the certification for it. They're very few and far between. You know, that's a random luck thing. I know people that have 5 or 6 Phaetons in their inventory at all times. Me, I think total, I've had 7 Phaetons. I mean, since the launch of the game, 7.
It's like, can I have better drop rates, please?
So I think 343 did a really good job with the rec system. Now, doing the season pass, see, there we get back into that money thing. Yeah, it just generates a lot of income to pay for the add-on DLC, but that's all it pays for. So a lot of the extras that we've gotten in Halo 5 won't happen.
Well, it depends. I mean, if you had every person potentially pay an extra $20 or $25, would that have equated to what they made through rec pack sales?
Yeah, and will they see that to reinvest it in Halo, or will they just say, pocket? Don't get me wrong. A significant chunk of the rec packs, they just went into Microsoft's pocket as profit.
Well, and part of it,
don't get me wrong, they reinvested back into Halo. They invested in esports. They invested in a lot of things with it. But I guarantee you, part of it went into Microsoft's pocket.
Yeah, some core piece of it did, and then there's other pieces that went to HCS, and another part that went to whatever other campaigns they did. So they did the hurricane relief thing, so they did that, and there have been a couple other things that they have raised money to go towards other things.
Which, that's something that the flexibility of the microtransaction system can do. The paid DLC, it's a little bit more structured, rigid system, you know, because that all has to be planned out. And if you don't have a microtransaction system in place, you can't just throw one up.
Yeah, so it has to be part of the core element of the game from the start.
Right.
So one of the things that popped up in the chat, Haas actually posted this, but if we were given options, what would you choose as far as like Halo? And this is kind of just an overall question and thought activity for people listening and for people in the chat, but he provided four different options. Make the base game $80 and include all DLC that would come with the game afterwards. So in the event of Halo 5, all map packs, potential campaign expansions, any other wreck weapons or skins or other DLC things that would come out later. So $80 flat, straight up front, everything is included. Next option would be $60 base game with microtransactions to fund the rest. So the model that Halo 5 currently uses. $60 base game with the DLC packs. So either something like a season pass or individually buy packs like they did for Halo Wars 2. And then $60 base game plus DLC, paid DLC, and then plus microtransactions.
Currently, after, you know, with the experience we have with the Halo 5 model, I like the Halo 5 model. If they're going to charge me $80 for a game, they better not charge me for Xbox Live. I am not joking. I mean, don't get me wrong. You get a lot of benefits with Xbox Live. But if you're going to start charging us $80 for a freaking game, you can give us online multiplayer for free. I'm not saying you can give us the rest of this stuff, but online multiplayer, you can give that to us for free because that's just outrageous. But don't get me wrong. The money I've spent on Halo games is unreal. And Dust, you're right there with me. You know, anybody listening to the podcast is probably right there with me. And it's really irritating when you see everything you just paid $120 for go on sale for $49.99 or $59.99.
Game of the Year edition.
They put out the Game of the Year edition that they didn't even win. You know, it's that part's irritating. You know, I can understand if the game is a couple of years old. That, okay, fine. But I've seen some of these games. And not necessarily Halo, but some games, they'll launch, and 2 months later, you can buy them for $29.99. And these are $60 games.
The only thing is, and Pins brings this up too, is Xbox Live isn't a game developer. That extra $20 is actually going towards what would essentially be a season pass. So it's bundling that season pass in with the game.
Well, let me refocus that. If a Microsoft game studio is going to charge me $80, they can give me free multiplayer.
So what would you say for like Halo Wars 2, where you paid $60 for the base game and then instantly in the same transaction, you're bundling that with the season pass for another $25. That's $85 that you're paying for a game right up front.
I know. That's one of those games that kind of pissed me off that shortly after they completed all the downloadable content, you can buy the package for $60.
That payment for early access.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm very happy with my purchase. The part that gets me is that, okay, the game's out. You've completed all your downloadable content. The game's not even a year old. And you're already selling it at a package price for half what everybody else paid for it. That's irritating. The one thing that I can say now that makes it more palatable is that I got Halo Wars for free. Or sure. I paid $60 for Halo Wars again. Either way. Because I don't think the package deal comes with Halo Wars Definitive Edition. I think it's just Halo Wars 2.
Halo Wars is
a separate purchase. So if you want both, at least for PC, or I guess even if you want the updated for Xbox One, it's going to cost you $80. That's a little bit more palatable. I've never really been a big fan of the paid DLC thing. mainly because of the divisions it puts in the community.
And that's understandable. But at the same time, it's extra content.
Right.
That, and there is kind of something to be said, too. It's like, well, and I think the gaming industry is in a really weird place where you couldn't just say, well, put all your content up front and don't do any DLC. It's like, no, there's an expectation now to have DLC. So in a sense, it's like, okay, we're going to restrict ourselves, make the base game 60 because every base game is 60. And I think that's another inherent problem in the system is not every game should be a base of 60.
When it used to be every base game was 40, and then it went to 50, and now it's 60. I mean, I get it. Prices go up. But what I'm getting for $60 is a lot more than what I got for $40.
As far as like graphical improvements and...
Well, I mean just content. You know, a $40 game cartridge, which, you know, would take me 6 months to save, scrap, and scrape pennies for, was, you know, maximum a three-hour game. You know, this is just side-scroller games.
Super Mario.
Don't get me wrong. There were some other, you know, other games out there that were a lot more in-depth, but they weren't games I wanted to play. You know, Zelda is a good example of that. Zelda, that's a long-ass game.
I still haven't played it.
For, you know, comparative to Super Mario Brothers, which launched on the same platform. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Yeah, that game takes about an hour and a half to complete. Once you know how to beat all the players, it takes about 20 minutes. I think the world record on it is 8 minutes.
Wow. That's a short game.
The entire game, 8 minutes.
Well,
I don't see anybody completing Halo 5 in 8 minutes.
No. But you do see people beating the original Mario game in 4 minutes.
Right.
I think the world record is 3 minutes and 42 seconds or something like that.
Right. Because they've learned the game and their Nintendo provided the shortcuts.
Albeit unintentionally, but still.
Yeah. You know, it just the way the world, you know, things aligned, they made a game that could be beat in under 5 minutes.
AKA easily broken.
And that's what you got for a $40 game. No updates. If it was broke, it was broke.
Yeah. Although I think there's some games back in the days where they actually did do recalls because of some game-breaking bugs. But we don't have that anymore because now everything's online. And it's just, oh, we're going to push a patch.
Exactly. And, you know, that's one advantage to the newer games. Is that if there is a major problem or a problem with one of these newer games, they can push the patch. So, paying $60 for the base game doesn't bother me. And probably here for too long, it's going to be $70 anyway. Just because pricing. Everything costs more.
Well, if everything goes in the route of 4K, then yeah, potentially. So, I'm kind of in a split camp between like either $60 with like a season pass that would cover any and all future DLC, or $60 base with microtransactions to help fund the extra content. I definitely would steer clear of individual DLC packs, like how Halo Wars is doing it. But then again, for other kinds of games, that pricing model works better than it does for a first-person shooter that has matchmaking in it. And doing the $60 base and season pass would have a divide in the community, but it wouldn't be, I think, as drastic as it would be if you were trying to pile in a bunch of different mixes of, well, people have this DLC and people have this DLC and people have this DLC.
In Halo Reach, in custom lobbies, we would constantly have people come in that didn't have Forge World.
Which was free.
In Halo 3, have people that didn't have cold storage. It was free.
The DLC model has definitely changed since 2007.
That kind of deal, it has its benefits, but its drawbacks just bug me. I don't want to be restricted from playing content that I paid for because other people choose not to buy it.
So I think, I don't know if Halo 3 had this, but I think the later games, didn't they have matchmaking parameters based on who had what DLC? I thought they did.
They had special DLC playlists, but even the people in the DLC playlist didn't have all the DLC. They were only required to have some of the DLC to be in the playlist. So yeah, you'd get to play some of the new maps, but you wouldn't be able to take advantage of your entire library.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
I mean, I forget. I think it was an oddball achievement, or was it a kit? It's either a capture flag or all oddball achievement that you had to get on orbital.
Yep, it was, I believe, capture the flag.
Yeah, I still don't have that one because I never could get the stupid map.
So we had a party where we deleted the two other map packs and we just had the one map pack that had orbital in it, and we just kept playing until we got that map in that game mode, and then we finally got it.
Yeah, I did that. For 3.5 hours, I did that. Didn't get orbital once.
Eek.
Got all the rest of the maps. Or I'd get orbital and it'd be Slayer.
Well, I guess we just got to try again.
You know, that really boils down to making achievements tied to specific maps. But even still, if I wanted to play Capture the Flag on orbital, I was screwed.
Well, maybe we can try again.
Regular matchmaking, it stacks maps in a weird freaking way. Even with this system, I'll play the same map over and over and over again. But at least I know there's a chance I'll get to play the map I want to play.
Yeah, matchmaking is a little bit better.
Is one better than the other? Depends on how you look at it. As long as Halo, and I'm speaking of Halo only, stays away from the pay-to-win model, I don't have a problem with microtransactions.
I would agree.
And no matter what anybody says, the rec packs are not a pay-to-win system. Just because you spend hundreds of dollars on rec packs does not guarantee you're going to win.
No, but I think early on...
I'm talking right now.
Right now, no, but...
It does give you more options, but it doesn't guarantee a win. Now, at game launch, yeah, people probably still had more... had more of an advantage because they had more of the specialty weapons. But it still didn't guarantee a win. It made it easier to win, don't get me wrong, but it did not guarantee a win.
Definitely feels like an advantage. But I agree with you. Now, with how long the game's been out and how much... For people that have played the game on a somewhat regular basis, it doesn't matter as much anymore. And with some of the changes that they've made to Warzone proper and the timings and how quickly you gain rec levels and how quickly now the rec level gauge refills, they've kind of helped address some of that balance issue.
Yeah, you know, this is a debate that will go until the end of time.
Oh, yeah.
Now, with, like I said, if you keep the microtransactions in the customizable side, okay, that's cool. You know, I don't care what game that's in. As long as it's in the customization side, that's fine. But the other side of that part is, when I'm playing the game, I want unlocks that are tied to specific things in the game.
Doesn't that kind of counteract what they're trying to do as far as like getting money because of
no,
it being random? What
I want certain items, not all the items, certain items in the rec system that are only unlockable by completing something in the game.
There are. They're mostly emblems right now.
No, I mean like armor pieces or, well, you know, it's all cosmetic stuff, like armor pieces. I want to be able to put a piece of armor on or see somebody in a piece of armor and say, they've completed campaign on Legendary Solo.
Sure.
That person over there has done it on Lasso.
Yeah, and they don't have that right now, but they have a system that kind of resembles that as far as the certain promotion levels. Once you get to a certain level, you do have those emblems that you get. So while it's not armor currently, at least that system can be put in place just from today's game.
The reason I say armor is more likely to get used than the emblems. Because everybody's got the emblem that they like. Yeah, don't get me wrong, there's some cool emblems that are unlocks. You know, the emblem I like is the Flaming Ninja. It's been my emblem for many years. And I got that out of a rec pack. If I would have had to do something specific in Halo 5 to get that emblem, most likely I would have done everything I could to get that completed. Which means more playtime in their game. There's lots of things that they could do differently. Like I said, and that's more of a, not really in as part of the debate, but that's an improvement that they can make to the current system.
Bobby mentioned that there was the Helios Grill that was tied to Legendary and MCC. And if you think about it, there's the Achilles as far as Spartan Company commendations go. But as far as the other armor piece stuff, and one of the things that I have issues with on Halo 5 is just how many different armor sets there are. Unless you're someone like Receptor that spends hours looking at armor, you're playing in a matchmaking game, you don't know what armor you're looking at. You have no clue. Halo 3 was simple enough. You had 9 armor sets to worry about, and you knew which armor set someone was wearing because it was distinct enough that you could see it from a mile away.
It was the same in Halo Reach. You had more armor sets, but you could see the differences in the armor.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't 3 different versions of the George armor. I mean, they're all the same. They just got different markings on them.
Halo 4 was pretty good as well. There were some that it started to teeter in that direction.
Yeah. I was not happy with Halo 4's customization as far as armor at all. I did not find a single armor set that I actually liked. I had an armor set I wore, but that's just because they won't let you play the game naked.
You need some kind of protection.
I loved the customization in Reach.
I think everyone that has said the customization in Reach is the best.
Was perfect. I loved how you could choose different legs, different arms, different chest, different helmet. And then you had different options you could put on your helmet just to distinguish you a little differently. In Halo 5, everybody just kind of blends together.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only a few really distinct armor sets. The George armor set's pretty easy to pick out. The Helios Grill, at least the helmet is easy to pick out.
Yeah, Mark 6 is pretty iconic.
Yeah, Mark 6. And
the standard one.
Oh, the one that for the Spartan competitions.
Oh, yeah, it's the Achilles.
Yeah, the Achilles helmet. The Achilles helmet is really distinctive. All the rest of them, they just kind of blend in with each other.
Which kind of sucks. Because you spend all that time trying to customize, and sometimes too much of something is bad. I think in Halo 5, they really overdid the amount of armor. Well, they're only sets, really, for Halo 5.
If they would take what they have in Halo 5 as far as individual pieces, not the marking difference, just the individual chest, the individual arms, individual legs, because there are multiple sets that are just duplicates of each other that just have different markings on them. Put them in a drop-down menu, let the player choose which pieces they want to use, which helmet, which arms, which legs, which chest. You would have infinitely more combinations of armor sets than you currently have, and you would have fewer assets in the game.
And people would pop out. You would
exactly
be able to notice what they're wearing and get rid of the really odd ones too. Like the helmets that basically have no visor in them that don't really make any canonical sense.
I don't know. I kind of like the googly eyes.
You're talking about the, what, the Oceanic one?
The Linda helmet.
Oh, yeah. But doesn't hers at least have a visor?
No.
On it?
She just has googly eyes.
Oh.
She doesn't have an actual visor. She's got, like, binoculars stuck to her face.
Maybe I guess some of the other ones are more realistic or potentially realistic.
I get what you're saying about at least have a window that the people can look through.
Like, if they have an EMP, like, they have to take off their helmet in order to actually see where they are.
Well, see, you know, Spartan suits are hardened against that. They don't have that problem.
They're hardened. They're not invulnerable.
They're hardened against EMP attack.
Yes, hardened, not invulnerable.
Which means, generally, if somebody hits them with an EMP, by the time they can hit the EMP again, they're probably already going to be dead. But yeah, I get what you mean.
Fair point. Well, it's like at the end where you're getting hit with that Guardian Blast and you have your visor all messed up. It's like you can still see out because the visor piece isn't being affected. The heads-up display is. That's a tangent from what we were discussing. But I'm with you, GT. I think as long as if they decide to keep microtransaction in there, as long as it's nothing that results in any kind of pay to win, then they're probably okay.
And your point about it being an advantage early in the game's cycle or early in the game's life is a valid argument, but it's a limited time advantage.
The only thing is that's when most people are playing. And if you get a bad rap within the first few months and then everyone's going off to another game and they're like, oh, well, this sucked, and oh, this next game out, well, last time they did this, I didn't like it. That's potential loss of sales just because the bulk of the people that are going to play Halo are only going to play within its first maybe 2 or 3 months. And then the population drops.
The bulk of those people are going to drop Halo anyway because the next flashy thing is going to distract them.
Yeah, but...
No, I'm serious, Dust.
No, I get that. But
they like, they buy the latest game because it's the latest game. So, yes, the next game, they're going to buy it. They'll play it for 3 months. They'll drop it. They'll buy the next big game. Unfortunately, that's what the market has devolved to.
Fair point.
I mean, yes, Halo's had its problems. Halo has dropped population. And yes, the games have caused the drop in population. But also, if you watch the population's numbers, the population numbers always drops right after a big game launches.
That's true.
Because a sizable chunk of the Halo community goes and plays that game for a while, and a lot of them come back, don't get me wrong, and some of them don't come back because they get really into the game.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's a balancing act. You just try to keep the player's attention as long as you can.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Makes sense.
I'm sorry, but a lot of gamers have the attention span of a gnat.
My roommate is the quintessential version of that. He hops around between so many different games.
Yeah. Squirrel! Oh.
Makes me wonder if he's actually ever finished a game. Well, yeah, he has finished a couple games and then he's gone back and played through like in a different storyline or whatever, but yeah. He'll just play one game one day and not even finish it and go to another game. I'm like, don't you want to finish it? Don't you want to see how it ends? And he's just off to another game. I'm like, this doesn't make sense to me. I have to finish a game. But people are different.
Well, a prime example of this, Gamefly. Now, granted, they're not as big as Netflix, but they make some serious bank.
Yeah, because people want to just play a game for a little bit.
They get a game, they play it for 2 or 3 games, they send it back, get another one.
Gosh, I haven't heard the term Gamefly in a while.
EA Access, Xbox Game Pass. 2 more examples of it. Thanks, Bobby.
That's true. Didn't think about that, but you're right.
You don't get me wrong. The game developers will find a way to get their money. And they will cater to the market that will pay the money. whether it be through a subscription based game service or microtransactions. So pick your poison.
Well, and based on what we've seen in Halo 5, it does seem to be a pretty good model that works for the most part. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that we see continue on through Halo 6.
I mean, at least with the microtransactions in Halo 5, I don't feel like I'm renting the game.
Right.
And what bites me is software's using the same freaking model. You rent the software, you don't own the software.
All the subscriptions. Adobe, Office, trying to think of something else, but...
I mean, even my Password Vault, the new version of that, it's a subscription-based service.
Everyone wants your subscriptions. Yay.
You know, and it's maddening. I don't want to rent programs. I want to buy them and own them.
Did you, I don't know if you heard about this, but have you heard about the story that EA is making two of their top franchises? I think it's FIFA and Madden subscription instead of releasing a new game every year.
It wouldn't surprise me.
For those games, it makes sense. Because there's no need to release a new game every year just because of roster updates and when there's little graphical improvement.
Well, I mean, honestly, with a game like that, you could tag on a $10 update pack to update the rosters for the next season.
You want the new year? Pay $10.
Yeah. If you want the new season, it's going to cost you $10 to get the update. And there's enough people that play Madden and FIFA, they could make a killing at 10 bucks a hit.
Yeah, we've gone from age of packaged software to subscriptions, and I think a big part of that is because everyone has pretty, well, not everyone, a fair amount of people have decent internet speeds in order to have subscription models. And I mean, like in the case of Office and Adobe, you can pay for packaged year versions of their software. So like for Office, you can get Office 16. For Adobe, you can get the Creative 2017 suite instead of the Creative Cloud.
But you don't own the product. You are still renting it.
I mean, yeah, that's every software license agreement. Is you don't own the product. You're using a licensed copy of it.
I don't have to have the next version to continue using it. I don't have to pay another year subscription or another month subscription to continue using the software.
Yeah.
If you don't pay Adobe every month or for every month, you don't get to use the software.
You can.
Even though it's still installed on your computer, you cannot use the software.
You can if you buy the package version for that year. You just don't get the updates to that version past a certain point.
Yeah, but once that subscription's over with, you don't have access to the program.
It's not a subscription, though, in the sense of like Adobe or Office. It's you buy that product, you get the updates for that product, and at some point, that product becomes obsolete and you're stuck with whatever updates you got, but you can still use the program. And then you have to either buy the next version of it.
I have not found an actual copy of Adobe that you can buy. All I've ever found is the ones you rent or that you pay the subscription to.
You can buy the Creative Suite itself as a standalone item. It's hard to get to, but you can do it. Same thing for Office.
Yeah, well, I know you can from Office because I own copies of it. That, you know, the nice thing is that those are actually easy to find. But, yeah, the Adobe thing? No, I haven't been able to find it. I guess I'm not looking in the right spots.
Yeah, or maybe they got rid of it recently, but I know you could buy 2016 separately, and I thought you could buy 2017 separately, but... I mean, I just have the Creative Suite. Yeah,
the only Adobe software that I was able to find to purchase is their Elements software.
Maybe that's what I'm getting confused with.
Which is their entry-level version of Photoshop and Premiere. Which, granted, both programs are very powerful, and I love using them. They're great to work with, and the more I use them, and the more familiar I get with them, the easier they get to be to use. They're not full versions. There's stuff in Elements you can't do that you can do in Premiere or in the full version. And I mean, my version is, what, 2-3 years old now? And, yeah, 13. So it's 4 years old. Currently, Adobe still updates it. Now, how much longer that'll be, I don't know. You know, if they choose to quit updating it, that's fine. Because I don't see my video needs changing anytime soon. You know, because the next step in my video, well, the next change to any of my video editing stuff would be 4K. And I'm not going to invest in 4K hardware for a while because I am not paying a premium price for 4K capture equipment right now.
Yeah, it'll come down.
Not when my 1080p, yeah, not when my 1080p stuff works just fine.
And there's a lot of, I think the install base for 4K is probably still very low. Wouldn't be catering to a big audience to begin with.
Well, I mean, honestly, Dust, you have a 4K monitor. Do you watch YouTube videos in 4K?
For ones that are available in 4K, I do.
Every time it's available?
Most of the time, yeah. So whenever I watch Corridor Digital stuff, I usually have Firefox on one of my side monitors. I'll drag it into my center monitor and I'll watch it in 4K. But that content is still very limited, the 4K content.
In which it will get more popular. Don't get
it will. But for now, it's still very much on the low side. I mean, 1080p is where the bulk of the content still resides.
On your phone, are you going to be watching 4K content?
What no. phone has a 4K screen on it? Maybe an iPad, but
you're
not going to
watch 4K. Yeah, you're not. Well, not even really on an iPad. I don't think any iPads have 4K monitors on them yet. Not to say they're not coming.
Well, they're more than 1080, but they're not 4K. I don't think they're full 4K.
I mean, my phone will do 720p.
Mine will do 1080.
If you can find an internet connection that can handle it.
Wi-Fi.
Like I said, you know, we're talking about a mobile device. Right. You're not going to be on Wi-Fi all the time.
True.
When you're dealing with YouTube content, you have to pick your audience. My audience, all 27 of them, none of them, the majority of them don't even own 4K stuff. There's a few of them that I have no idea what they own because I don't know who they are. There is no reason for me to put up 4K content because the bulk of people right now, they're still, the maximum they'll watch it in is 1080. And looking at my demographics of where it's watched, guess where most of my videos were watched?
Let me guess, on a mobile device.
Mobile devices. Exactly. So why 4K is all well and good, there's no point to it. Point to it right now. But that's personal preference.
Very true. Penn's just had a really funny comment in the chat.
Yes, it's truly enlightening, Penn's.
Must be a good source of relief for you. So that's our little discussion on the latest happenings in the gaming universe. I don't think it's going to affect Halo 6 too much. I know there's been some tweets out there and some concern with regards to how Halo would take this or other Microsoft studio games would take what EA is doing with Battlefront. But I'm not overly concerned. I think 343 appreciates the community's feedback and are sensitive to the community enough to where they have somewhat of a good say in what they want to do with Halo 6 when it comes to additional sources of money, whether it be through DLC or microtransactions. I think the model that we see in Halo 5 is probably going to be very similar to what we see in Halo 6. And it's not really a point I'm worrying about it now. But I do understand the implications of it from an overall gaming industry perspective. We'll have to see what happens with Halo 6, but I'm not concerned about it. If they start talking about it and there's some stuff that comes out that's shady and has cause for concern, then we can start talking about it and raising the flags with 343. Because they do listen. And they have proven that they've listened through updates that they've made to Halo 5, through some of the letters that have been written by Bonnie, Kiki, Dan, or Frankie, and even them going back to MCC for Xbox One X. They listen and they care. And I don't think they're going to jeopardize the game that they love and are passionate about to make a quick buck.
I hope that they don't get greedy is probably the easiest way to put it.
It's a hard balance because companies want to make money. That's what they're in the business for, to make money.
I get it.
But I think enough of the studio has that sense of community and wanting to make a game that is going to be accepted by the community, especially for people that have come from the community, to have a good say in it and to make some good rational decisions and make sure that both the player side and the development side get the best that they can for the money that will be invested into the development of the game.
Yeah, I don't want them to follow the business model that my boss follows.
What, break even?
Worse.
Oh.
Screw them wherever you can.
Oh, gotcha.
I don't mind paying good money for a good product.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, that's what drives a lot of my purchase decisions. You know, I work for an auto parts company. I work on cars for fun, along with play Halo. I don't buy everything that I need from the auto parts company that I work for, even though in that company, I get a significant discount off of what retail pays. I still go to other vendors to buy product because it is a better value for equal or more money. You know, to me, quality trumps price. If you deliver good quality, I don't mind paying the price. You deliver crap and charge me a lot of money for it, I have a problem with that.
Yeah, and you never buy from them again. That's where we'll wrap it up tonight. Thanks for listening to our discussion regarding the issue. If you haven't heard about it, then you've been living under a rock, or you follow some really good people that don't bring up a lot of crazy stuff that happens in the gaming community or the industry. So,
or you're like me and you just flat don't pay attention to it anymore because you're tired of listening to it.
Or that. So to wrap things up, quick little update on our Spartan company. We still have 5 slots available for people to jump in if you're still trying to get your Achilles helmet. We have 4 of our company accommodations still in the level 4 realm, the closest one is Road Trip. We still have another, looks like 530 to go. So eking ever so much closer to level 5 for that one. The back of the line is still Killing Marines, which we still have another 3,702. The closest one that we have to actually finishing is From the Top Rope, which is Kill an Enemy Spartan with a Ground Pound. And we're currently needing another 676 of those.
I got 2 tonight.
Yay! I think this, because I just pulled this up about 30 minutes ago, so this is probably after that.
Yeah, considering that was about 5 hours ago when I did that, yeah.
And none of those numbers have changed. I just refreshed it now. You can head on over to podtacular.com/company. You can request to enlist, and we will get you on for helping us out get our Achilles helmet. You can also check out our Xbox Club. That's where GT has been posting the Achieving Halo looking for groups. Like you said, we're going to be potentially looking at doing one of our next Achieving Halos in Fraggin' Fridays. We'll put up a poll on that on Twitter, and we'll see for judging interest on doing that. And you have, what, another 3 more installations for Halo 5 to complete after this edit, right?
Yep. There are currently 3 episodes that are left to be recorded.
Very nice.
Let's see. Let me get my list out, and I will tell you what's left. Currently, we have Genesis, The Breaking, and Guardians.
If you're interested in participating, make sure you are following GT on Twitter, and also making sure you're on the Xbox Club. Not sure when we're going to do the next one yet. GT has to edit the current one. And I'm guessing we'll see that out maybe next weekend or the weekend after, depending on Thanksgiving plans.
Well, that kind of all depends on the zombie cast thing.
Oh. That sucks.
I will do my best to get it uploaded by this weekend while I still have time. But if at the latest, it will be after the next podcast, but I am truly trying to get it uploaded this weekend. Matter of fact, tomorrow night, I will be spending a couple hours editing on it.
Okay.
I'll be working on doing assets for it.
Very nice.
And I'll tell you right now, we did not kill the hunters by knocking them off the platform.
Oh, well.
No matter what you do, don't ever try to do that on anything above easy. Because even on easy, it seems like it's next to impossible.
It's a challenge, that's for sure. I think it's doable. I think when I did on normal.
Oh, it's doable.
But easy definitely makes it a lot easier.
You're not doing it on heroic.
No. You'll get smashed before you have even the chance to have them try to jump off.
Because they just kind of look at you and, you know, they flip the finger at you and then you're dead. We tried for 40 minutes. I cut that part out of the video.
I don't blame you on that one.
Let's put it this way. By the time I was done recording, the video was an hour and a half.
Whoa. Long. Okay. Yeah. I could see how that one was very difficult and frustrating.
And actually, this weekend, I might actually try to con the group at Fraggin' Friday into helping me get that one. Because you want to know the most annoying part about getting that achievement is the freaking AI.
Yeah. It's a lot better to do it with coordinated people.
No, it's not so much that. It's the AI gets in the way. And if you're not careful, they'll kill the hunters before you get a chance to knock them off.
Sometimes they're helpful, but they're mostly a pain.
Yeah. I literally would send them to the other end of the map. And of course, they wouldn't stay there.
That's funny. I mean, frustrating, but funny.
Needless to say, I was the elite controller was flexing a little bit.
Yikes. Yeah, Bobby was saying they need a Titanfall function to stay here and guard instead of following.
Yeah, that would work. Stay
here. I will do the work. Thank you. If you're around Friday, then GT may be asking you to help out. Otherwise, normally we have our Fraggin' Fridays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, hosted by GT. Lobby's choice on Warzone, Arena, and potentially campaign for the few upcoming weeks. We also have our podcast, so we do on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. For those that want to join in on the live recording fun, you can do that over at Mixer, poddecker.com/Mixer. Make sure you check out our podcast network. We're part of a network of gaming-specific shows, including Critzcast, Guardian Radio, The Learning Cliff, Podcast 76, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. You can find out more about those shows over at thepodcast.com. Another quick reminder that you can get the latest Loot Crate over at podtackler.com/lootcrate. We have until December 15th to purchase the crate. And with the potential to win the mythic crate of the Xbox One X. So make sure you head on over to podtackler.com/lootcrate and you can use Podtacular at checkout as a code to get $3 off your crate. The theme is A Great Journey, which revolves around Halo 3. Also, the release of Legacy of Onyx is now out in audiobook, ebook, and paperback form. You can head on over to podtacular.com/onyx-legacy, and that's a quick link over to Amazon for you to purchase the book. And I think that'll wrap it up for us tonight. Thanks everyone for tuning in. We will catch you all next week.